Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. This is Mary Neal. I'm station director for Human Rights Demand. Frederick Douglass, a slavery abolitionist, said that power concedes nothing without a demand. It never has, and it never will. We believe that here at Human Rights Demand Channel. Today, we will bring to you another episode by James Cosner. James Cosner is a human rights advocate out of California. Moreover, James Cosner is a man who is fed up enough to stand up, and he urges you to stand up with him. James Cosner will start a human rights fast, a hunger strike, if you will, on Tuesday of this week, May 13th. He told me he chose May 13th because that's the anniversary of the MOVE organization's bombing. That's MOVE, M-O-V-E, that happened, I believe, in New Jersey. And May 13th is the anniversary of that bombing on American citizens, African Americans who were killed and were arrested for living their own lives. Also, he demands the release of certain political prisoners, including Leonard Peltier and Mamir. Others are also being honored with this hunger strike for human rights. Moreover, instead of just honoring them, he's demanding their release. Also, J. James Cosner demands police accountability. There's a list of dead Americans and the police officers who are credited with their killings on the website by James Cosner and his comrades at Campaign, the number four, Justice. That's campaignforjustice.com. Please go to that website and see what the hunger strike will seek to accomplish. Demand is that America stop immediately deportations of immigrants. Those are the three demands made by James Cosner, who is a human rights advocate and who this week on Tuesday is expected to begin his hunger strike. I hope that it doesn't go as far as he said, but he has said that he is prepared to go to the death. I hope that it will not go as far as he said. So, I want to thank you for coming today. I don't know if Mr. Cosner is on the line. We do have a guest at 0194. How are you today, 0194?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you, Mary?
I'm doing well, thank you. Your name?
My name is Jane Swenson, and I'm from Southern California, and my son, Roscoe Cambridge, was shot by Anaheim PD on January 19th, 2012. And
tell
I've
us
never,
about that. Tell us about that, that shooting.
That shooting? Yes, Mary. We dropped him off to go. He said he was going to go buy some cigarettes, and the rest of us were not at home at the time. He apparently was at the police station, which is a substation in Anaheim Hills, which is, you know, a wealthy area. It's not, you know. And 15 minutes later, apparently, he was shot to death by Anaheim PD. They said that he attacked the policeman, but yet there's no video outside a substation where there was, you know, other businesses too, Mary. And I can't believe they said it malfunctioned that day. It was 1:15 in the afternoon, so there was plenty of daylight, and there were no witnesses that saw Roscoe attack the police officer. And it's just the police officer's word against, you know, Roscoe, who is dead, obviously, and he shot him four times, once, twice in the back, too. So it's been very heart-rending for our family, and I know it's been 2 years, but we just don't feel we got justice. We never knew the truth exactly what happened that day. Who's to say Roscoe attacked the policeman? I don't know. You know, and there's no video. It's unreal. So
well,
that's
Roscoe,
how I feel.
Was he given to was Roscoe given to balance? Did he have a predisposition to balance? Was he mentally ill?
Yes, he did. I believe he was mentally ill. He had been diagnosed. He had been in jail several times. But that day he was extremely calm, and he is not a violent person. I've never known him hurt anybody in my life. So that's what I don't understand. Roscoe had no violent tendencies at all. So, you know, I just don't believe that he did that, to be honest.
I understand totally. My name is Mary Neal. I'm Director of Assistance to the Incarcerated,
yes.
Mentally Ill. The mentally ill suffer from the most fatal disease that they can in America. Mental illness is the most fatal disease because of the lack of accountability for police murders.
Exactly.
You know, mental
and
illness doesn't.
People
mental
don't
illness
understand,
not necessarily
Mary.
Lead to death. It does not necessarily lead to death like cancer or like heart conditions. But it does lead to death because of the lack of accountability of our police officers. And I really give you my condolences regarding your son.
Thank you, Mary.
I'm so sorry that he died. As you might know, my brother was secretly arrested and murdered in Memphis Shelby County Jail in 2003. And that's how I became aware of the fact that people with mental illness are denied their right to life. They have no protected right to life in America. And so what happened to your son, you're right, what happened to your son is something that resonates throughout the country. And oftentimes there's no accountability whatsoever for these deaths by police officers. Go ahead and speak to us some more about your son. And let me ask you, were you in contact with James Cosner?
Yes, I did speak to James Cosner. In fact, I spoke to him last night.
Okay. And he gave you the phone number to the show today?
Yes, he did, Mary. Because I just want people to be aware, you know, the police brutality.
I just want to make sure that James Cosner had the right phone number to the show because he's not on the line now, which is sort of, it's surprising, and I hope it's not cause for alarm. So you go right ahead, ma'am.
Yes, no, I'm saying the public just doesn't understand mental illness, and I didn't understand it until it happened to me. And, you know, if you have a broken leg, people can see that, and they feel sorry for you. But when you have a mental illness, you know, nobody understands it, and it's hard to take care of it. And I had the police at my house, and I had to ask them to help me, you know, because I didn't know what to do. And they just said, you know, kick him out. And he lived on the streets, you know, for 6 months. Then he came home for Christmas, and he still, you know, wasn't right, but I told him he couldn't stay, you know, so he had to leave again. And I think he got worse from being homeless is what I think. And I feel so guilty that I should have helped him, but I just didn't know how to help him. You know what I'm saying? And he was, you know.
What happened to you, my dear, is something that happens to many family members. Of course you love your son, and of course you wanted him to have a home, but just not your home. Okay, and that's
exactly.
Not unusual, and it's not. I have an article I published that said the title of it is, "Am I a Mean Person?" You know, am I a mean person? And it's written because a young woman wrote to a friend of mine who's mentally ill herself. Her name is Pam Wagner, and she said that she was about to stop helping her brother and letting him live with her because he was a paranoid schizophrenic, and she had reached the point where she had become afraid of him. And she said, am I a mean person? And so I want to answer all the relatives who are asking themselves that question today, because with the recent publicity about the mentally ill in our communities, and many of you don't know where your relatives are, you don't know how they're faring, and you're beginning to second-guess your decision to tell them, no, you can't live with me. You're beginning to feel guilty about that. You're beginning to feel remorse that you don't know where they are. You don't know how they are faring, and you just don't know how to think of yourself, and you don't know how to think of perhaps relatives who wouldn't help you with this person who had extreme mental illness. But I tell you in all fact that no, it's not your fault. No, you were not wrong if you felt like it was unsafe for you in your home. It was not wrong for you to let your son know that he could not live with you. Generally speaking, the mentally ill are not balanced. Generally speaking, they stand a much better chance of balance happening to them than they do actually doing balance themselves. However, we do know that the mentally ill who are seriously mentally ill do and have been known to commit very vile acts, including murder. And so it's not unreasonable for you to not feel comfortable taking on the care of a person who has severe mental illness.
Exactly,
I remember
Mary.
With my brother, I remember my mother staying up with him. And sometimes the mentally ill, when they're not medicated, can stay awake for days, literally 4 and 5 days at a time. And as they stay awake, they get more and more into their psychosis. And she was trying to protect us in the house as well as neighbors. And so understand that by not treating the mentally ill, you risk our community's safety, as well as the families of the mentally ill person. As I said, most mentally ill people are not valid, just like this mother. But now and then we hear of major catastrophes caused by untreated mental illness. And I know that firsthand from my mother, who has set up sometimes 4 days to watch my brother, Larry Neal, and see that he didn't hurt anyone in our house or hurt any of our neighbors, because that's how he talked sometimes. That's some of the things he talked about people being body snatched by Martians and they need to be destroyed, that sort of thing. And so families of the mentally ill have a lot to endure. And now and then, families have to give up. But we don't give them up to be shot down and killed by police officers. We don't give them up to be secretly arrested like Larry Neal, and you can look that up, wrongful death of Larry Neal, and be secretly arrested and murdered under undisclosed circumstances. We do not give them up for that. We give them up because we are forced to. We have no assistance with our severe mentally ill people. And we have a congressional bill that's right now before Congress. It's called the Helping Families in Mental Health Crisis Act. The congressional number for that
law. And Laura's law.
Laura's
if I'd had Laura's law, I could have got my son help. I know I could have done. I had another
that's
option.
Absolutely,
you know what I'm saying?
Yes, I know
I'm
you.
Sorry?
I know you. I know you. I know your problems, even though we never spoke before. I know some of what you endured for all those years. How old was your son?
29 years old. And do you know
how
I found out? Nobody called me. I was at work. Do you know how I found out my son had been shot dead? On the television, on the news. And then I went down to the police station. And they, do you know what the first officer said to me? He said, oh, you're the woman that has a crazy son that built a trailer. And I says, that's me. Is that my son that died? And he wouldn't even tell me. And he says, well, you have to go talk to the detectives. They took me in a room. And they still wouldn't tell me whether it was my son. And they interrogated me, and then they printed out a picture and said, is this your son? I said, yeah, that's my son, after the interrogation. So I was like, really, I just think the treatment was disgusting. I mean, the families are victims, too. We're people, you know, and the way they treat us like we're dogs, I just don't appreciate that at all.
Well, they treat
you
actually
Mary?
Worse than dogs. They treat you worse than dogs. They treat the families of the mentally ill worse than dogs because
there's no compassion.
After Michael Vick harmed dogs and killed dogs, the other dogs were taken in loving homes and they were protected. We, the families of murdered mentally ill people, are not cuddled. We're not given any protection. And if we dare speak out against these murders as you're doing now, what happened to me is I started being a target for stalking and censorship and all of that. Did you find that to be the case?
Yes. I feel every time I see a police car, I get nervous. I'm just not comfortable. And, I mean, I've never really had contact with the police until, you know, with my son. And it's just scary. And I thought they were here to help us and protect us. You know what I'm saying? But they're just not. I don't know. I grew up in England, so the police are different over there. Here,
yes,
they're very,
God, they're
you know.
Different someplace. Thank God they're different in England so far. We have another caller on the line at 5690.
Yes.
Good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon. Janet Chavis calling from New York City, New York. How's everyone?
We're doing fine. Thank you very much. Listen, I'm going to let you two ladies go ahead and discuss the issue.
Yes.
Hi.
Y'all go ahead and discuss the issue. We have another 10 minutes on the air, and then we have another 15 minutes beyond that. So in all, we have approximately 25 minutes, during which time we can discuss the problems. We can discuss why James Costner is going on a fast for human rights. And one of the main reasons, he said, is to stop police violence And we know that the mentally ill comprise some 50% of the cases of police violence, whether they die or whether they're simply wounded. But 50% of the police violence cases are people with mental illness. However, we invite whomever to call. You don't have to have a mentally ill subject who was killed. You don't have to have a relative, a loved one, or friend killed. You might be calling because you, too, are just concerned about human rights. And whatever the issues are, I'm sure James Cosner, if he was on the phone, he'd want to hear from you. Last night I was on a radio show, and a representative from Mothers Against Solitary Confinement, a representative from that organization was on the phone. There are many different prisoner issues, arrest issues, and immigrants issues, and political prisoner issues. All of these are why James Cosner will go on a fast, and he said it would be a fast unto the death unless certain conditions are met. I want to give you, please, his website so that you can go and look up the Campaign for Justice, and you put this in www.campaign4justice.com. Campaign4justice.com. And you can read about what James Cosner is doing, and I'm sure he would welcome your support. He would be appreciative of you sharing information because, frankly, I don't agree with a fast unto death. I don't agree with that. And I think that it is better to live for justice than to possibly die for justice. But if he's going to do this thing, then let us at least make sure that he does not make the sacrifice without people knowing about it. We need to do what we can to spread that Campaign for Justice so far and wide that it cannot be ignored, because we know that this system is so callous that this man could sit here and do this fast and actually die, and the system would not be moved. But we must take his website and take this hunger strike and spread it far and wide so that it has to be paid attention to, so that the demands will stand a better chance of getting met with some semblance of justice. I know that regarding Thomas Kelly Thomas, the Justice Department, I read that they might very well take up that fight and put those police officers on trial for their federal violations against Kelly Thomas's right to life. And I think that is a step in the right direction. We talk a lot about CIT training, that's crisis intervention training, for police officers, but and I think that's a good thing. But the truth is that if police officers are allowed to disregard their training, and many murders happen in disregard of training, not because they're not trained. Let's get that straight. It's in disregard of training that they do have.
They don't follow protocol. No.
Exactly.
And they don't follow protocol.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So what basis would we believe they would follow protocol regarding CIT training? We don't have a basis for assuming they follow protocol regarding CIT training. They don't walk in the training that they already have. I think that what is needed is greater accountability for our police-involved shootings.
I agree.
As you know, a woman was killed in Texas last week on Tuesday, and her name was Miss Sully. That was her nickname, Miss Sully. She was 93 years old. And
I couldn't believe that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, they didn't beat the record. The record is a 107-year-old man in Arkansas who was killed last summer. And, older people sometimes suffer from age-onset dementia, which is a type of mental illness. And mental illness is often fatal in the USA, not because these people have cancerous tumors, but because they are oftentimes killed by police officers, and some of them are brutalized and killed by people in their communities and what have you. So I'm going to let 5690 have a word. Five, six, nine, oh.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That...
Yes, that's me.
Oh, that's you.
Go right ahead.
Yeah.
Introduce yourself. Your first name would do if you just want to give your first name and tell us what prompts you to call James Carsner and the Campaign for Justice today.
Okay. Well, my name is Danette, and I'm calling from out of New York. And I'm aware of James' campaign, and he told me about your program. And I'm glad that you're having this program so that people can extend their support to him as well as get a general overview of how the campaign is progressing. I understand that he's going to be on your program every Saturday as long as he is able in order to converse with people and so people can see how the campaign is going along. I'm also for National Action. I've, in fact, have launched a petition demanding national action for over a year. I've been pushing this. And when I heard James wanting to lay down his life in order to bring national attention to not just police brutality, but immigration rights, those who are political prisoners, it was just unheard of. And I think that that is something that the entire nation should rally around and support. I do agree with you, Mary, that I don't agree with what he is doing and laying down his life. I think that life should be kept preserved and retained at all costs, and that having life, you can do more, you know, for the fight of justice than laying down your life, because as you said, the powers that be will let you die. So it's imperative that everybody be made aware of this campaign and support this campaign and do what they can, you know, to make it go far and wide so that the support and galvanization surround it can be met to ensure that this man doesn't sacrifice his life in vain. That is the main key issue, what the people do about it in order to get the information out and have national action in every household in America. You know, there's also an issue, you know, surrounding people with mental disabilities or psychological, you know, shortcomings who are also being brutalized and murdered by police with impunity. When you look at it, no one is going untouched, okay? Every single person in the United States, regardless of your social standing, political education, your finances that you have, stands to be a victim of police. You know,
I agree with you. It can be anybody.
Anybody.
Yes,
and people,
anybody.
It's important, I believe, that people be made to see that they have a vested interest in supporting this action. You know, initially for years in America, you know, white America is accustomed to black folks singing no justice, no peace,
yes,
and talking about police brutality in their community. But they need to understand that it has reached their doorstep, that they too are being affected to the same atrocities being committed by police. And it's imperative that we make that crystal clear so that people do galvanize around this action and support it and demand, you know, not just accountability from the government, but action, okay, in the form
action.
Of firing, in the form of charges, in the form
discipline.
Of releasing those individuals who are in prison where there's evidence existing that shows that they are innocent, releasing people who are in prison for no other reason than using their American privileges of the freedom to fight and voice their opinion against the injustice. We are now living in a society that talks out of both sides of its mouth, It tells you that you have rights and liberties and freedoms to voice your dissent. And when you do, they incarcerate you when your dissent is against its own action. Now that has to be brought to the forefront of America. And the question needs to be put, is America a land of liberty and justice or not?
Absolutely. And I appreciate you saying that. You spoke so eloquently. And what is the name of your organization again?
National Action Against Police Brutality. Mary, you and I conversed on Facebook. I don't know if you realize it's me, but this is Danette Chavis.
Oh, hello there, Danette Chavis. And I am so
How
glad
are you?
You called today. I have people to reiterate their organizations and their websites and what have you for the sake of those who may not be aware of your work as I am.
Oh,
and we applaud your good work. And I want you to please feel free to give your website if you have one at this time.
Well, at this time, the official website for National Action Against Police Brutality is located on Facebook. There's an actual page devoted to National Action where I post stories, articles, and videos that show the atrocities of police across the United States. You know, from children being tasered and handcuffed to elderly people, you know, in wheelchairs being dumped on the floor, you know, and tasered by police. Because I want people to see that no one is untouched by this. And I post that information so that they can make a clear and conscious decision to, yes, by all means, sign the petition. You know, I want the government to see the will of the people have spoken, okay, and they demand you to hold these officers accountable for the atrocities being committed. There is no accountability whatsoever in the United States today. It is non-existent. Okay, you can hardly get a prosecutor to even bring about charges against an officer. And even when you do, as we've seen in the case of Romali Graham, there's a judge who will totally throw out the indictment because of a technicality. Okay, so there is no recourse for justice even within the courts. So we have no other option but to focus our attention directly at the government itself and demand it to act, demand it to hold those officers, including their superior officers, including the prosecutors who refuse to prosecute, accountable for the murders and false incarcerations of innocent people.
Well, thank you. We really appreciate you.
Thank
and we
you.
Have another
thank
caller on the line, 7870. 7870.
Hello?
Hi, you're on the air. This is the James
Cosby
campaign
for
justice.
Yeah, I'm just calling. I'm the nephew of Mark Garcia, who was murdered by the police in San Francisco. And my father asked me to call in because unfortunately he wasn't able to do it because he's doing some stuff for this campaign with what's going on the 13th.
Yes.
And I just wanted to give some information, not only to you but to your listeners, about this, if that's okay with, you know, with you guys.
Oh, we're so glad that you called to represent the campaign, the number four, Justice, campaignforjustice.com. Go right ahead.
Basically, on the 13th of this month, James will be doing a hunger strike and the demands that we are asking that would be granted is that all the political prisoners who are falsely imprisoned, they are to be released.
Okay, sir, your voice just dropped about 9 octaves. I don't know whether it's interference or what happened, but your voice just dropped too low.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can.
Okay, I'm sorry. It's probably my connection. But what we're asking is that all political prisoners would be released immediately, that all officers that has been involved in murdering individuals to be brought up on first-degree murder charges and taken off the force and stuff. And I don't know if you're informed on this, but matter of fact, just yesterday, the police officers in Stockton had just killed the elder lady once again.
Oh, my goodness.
And this, these are the things that...
Was,
yes, Stockton, California. It just
okay,
happened
how
yesterday.
Old was she? How old
I'm not for sure because I'm still trying to find out who she is and everything because as a lot of us know that the press only reports what they want to report or what the law wants them to report and stuff. So I'm still trying to find out who this individual is. All I know is that she was killed by a officer. I don't know the officer's name yet or anything, but she was killed by an officer here in Stockton, California.
Well, you know, on Tuesday, a 93-year-old woman was killed in Hearne, Texas, near Dallas. And she was 93 years old. But that's a separate incident, what happened in Stockton. Is that right?
Yes, that's separate. That's totally separate. This just happened, I believe it was yesterday, yesterday or the day before, because I was watching the news with my fiance, and it came on. They were talking about it and stuff. But I'm still trying to, you know, gather the information, because as we know, we only get to hear what they want us to hear and stuff. So I'm trying to, you know, get whatever information I can, which is very difficult, as we know, and stuff, because, you know, when it becomes a shooting involving the officer, you know, everybody's mouth is closed, basically, you know, and stuff. So I'm trying to at least walk around that particular neighborhood, find out exactly what neighborhood, because I'm not from Stockton. Although I live in Stockton now, but I'm not from here, so I'm not too familiar with Stockton and stuff. So I'm trying to find information about it and stuff. But this is what me, myself, my father, and other individuals, the National Family Organization Against Police Brutality is trying to put an end to because we're tired of loved ones losing other loved ones because of, you know, due to officers, due to, you know, the law and stuff. But and the frustrating part, at least for me and me only, is that if I went and did that, there would be no hesitation that I would be behind bars before I was even charged.
That's
okay?
True. You would be.
But then when it's somebody that has a badge, they got the police station, they got the mayor, they got the councils, they got everybody behind them trying to cover it up or not bring it out and stuff. Mm-hmm. And that is wrong. Okay? Mm-hmm. If they take a life, they need to be punished just like any of us would be punished. Okay, and with the political prisoners, the only reason why they're in prison is because they're speaking their mind, they're speaking the truth about what's going on in this country. Everybody's under the impression that this is a wonderful, you know, wonderful, happy country, you know, where to a point I agree with, but also to a point I don't, because if this is such a wonderful country and such a happy country, why is individuals being killed by police officers? Why is individuals being homeless? Why are their children being homeless, not being fed, not doing this, not getting an education and stuff? Why is all these things are happening if this is supposed to be such a wonderful country that everybody gives everybody the impression on and stuff?
Right.
So, you know,
right.
let's bring out the truth, and that's what these individuals who are falsely imprisoned has been doing and is still doing even though they're in prison. And stuff. And so that's wrong. You know, this is supposed to be a country that's freedom of speech. That's supposed to be one of our rights, freedom of speech. But yet when we practice that right, we're getting punished. Just like these individuals, Geronimo Prep. He's been in there for a good portion of his life. You know, and he just got out, I believe it was don't quote me on this, but I believe it's been like maybe 10 years now that he's been out. But he was in there for, I believe, over 25, falsely in there.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's you know, we need to, and I support James on this hunger strike, you know, 100%. And I'm encouraging not only the adults, but also the youth, the children
whoever could hear my voice or hear anyone else's voice that's talking about this campaign, please support it. You know, please support it, because I know and believe down in my heart, if we could have the numbers that supports this and shows this government and show this country that we are tired. We are tired of being abused. We are tired of being mistreated, that just maybe somebody will start listening. Maybe there will be, you know, these officers who killed these individuals and stuff could be brought on charges. Maybe these individuals that's falsely in prison will be released and be connected with their family once again. Maybe.
I just want to make a statement real quickly, please, and then we'll go back to the first speaker on this show, the first guest speaker. And this statement is regarding the Stockton death of an 84-year-old woman. Her name was Hazel Dingman, D-I-N-G-M-A-N, first name Hazel. Her daughter said that Dingman suffered from dementia, and we know that that's a common health condition of people who are elderly.
Yeah.
The Stockton Police Department responded to the 500 block of Downing Avenue where Dingman's body was discovered by her daughter on Thursday. The brother saw her that morning and took her to lunch, and her daughter was going to take her to dinner, and then they were going to watch Little League games. So her death has not been attributed to police killings. Rather, it appears to be a situation where someone else killed this woman who was a demented 84-year-old, and police were investigating it. But I think that it's very telling about the circumstances in America right now that when you heard that newscast, you automatically thought, oh, the police killed another old person, because they've killed so many. And they don't seem to know who killed Hazel Dingman. And who knows, it could have been a police officer. But we're not saying it was. We're saying that at this point, we don't know who killed her. But she was demented and she was elderly. And we thank you for bringing us this news. And I thank you for letting me interrupt you and get her story straight, so to speak, that she is a fatality, but we don't know who killed her. And I want to go back now, give you a minute to wrap it up, and then we'll go back to our first caller. Go ahead, sir.
I just, you know, the last thing I would like to say is, you know, the 13th of this month, you know, we're asking, you know, you guys to support James with this hunger strike. And what people need to understand is that we're not asking you to support of him dying, okay, because we know that this is a possibility if it goes long enough that that may happen. We're not asking anyone to support that at all. What we're asking people is to support is that, like I said, that these individuals that's falsely in prison is released. These individuals that we know for sure that has killed individuals, the police officers have killed individuals that are brought up on first-degree murder charge, just like any one of us would have been, you know, and stuff. And hopefully, and also to boycott Walmart, boycott the tobacco companies, and boycott the alcohol companies and stuff. And people may ask why we're asking what to boycott those things, because those really doesn't have anything personally with police brutality or with the political prisoners or anything. But the reason why we're asking to boycott those things is because those are the three biggest companies that this country live on. And if we could boycott those companies and hurt them in their pocket, just maybe we could get somebody above in this government to say, well, maybe we need to start listening, maybe we need to start looking into what's going on and stuff. So if we could have the support, I really appreciate it. I love you guys. You know, the Garcia family love everybody. And, you know, power to the people.
Well, thank you, Mr. Garcia. Yeah. And my condolences to all of you, all of us families who've had people killed by police or anyone else for reason of a common treatable health condition or because of their race or because of their class regarding their wealth status. Those are the three main reasons. Now, back to my first caller. Give us a goodbye, please. because we only have a half a minute.
Am I the first caller? I'm Jane.
Yes, you are.
Oh, okay. Thank you. No, it's been very interesting.